Imagine for a moment a day many years ago in the village of Newport, Rhode Island. A man takes his son to hear a visiting preacher. The preacher is drawing large crowds to hear the sermon. The little boy and his father sit in the crowd as the preacher says something like this. God holds you over the pit of hell, much as one holds a spider or some loathsome insect over the fire. Abhors you, is dreadfully provoked. His wrath towards you burns like the fire. He looks upon you as worthy of nothing else but to be cast into the fire. Now, when we are children, we have moments when something that we've only vaguely understood suddenly becomes clear. For the small boy, this was one of those times. The preacher painted such a powerful picture of the lost condition of the human race rushing into hell that it filled the small boy's imagination with horror. For the first time in his life, the preacher had made the ideas of hell and damnation plain to the boy. He had heard other preachers, but he had never been sure what they had been saying. Now he understood. All people were sinners. God was angry. Most human beings would end up in everlasting torment in hell. When the sermon was over, the congregation rose and began to sing praises to God. The little boy thought this was odd. He wondered why they should be praising God, a God that was going to send most of them to everlasting torment. As his father and he rode home, after the sermon, the boy saw the trees and the clear blue sky of Rhode Island. From the road, he could catch glimpses of the sea with its rolling waves catching the sunlight. To him, the earth seemed not bad or evil, but beautiful and alive. He felt not evil, but the thrill and excitement of being alive on a beautiful day. As the child and his father drove along on their way home, the father surprised the boy by whistling. Father seemed happy and content in spite of the terrible words of doom which they had heard just moments before. When they reached home, the little boy expected his father to rush to his mother and tell her of the impending doom. Instead, his father greeted his mother with a smile, reported that the sermon had been good, and then they sat down and ate dinner. Father seemed completely unconcerned about the awful fate that awaited his neighbors, his friends, and perhaps even himself and his family. The small boy was shy, withdrawn, and private, so he did not say anything to his father about the confusion he felt inside his heart. Nevertheless, he remembered the experience, the confusing contradictions of his religious upbringing stayed with him as he grew into adulthood. Many years passed. On Wednesday, May 5th, 1819, the Unitarian Congregation of the First Independent Church of Baltimore ordained Jared Sparks as their minister. To deliver the ordination sermon, they invited from Boston the greatest liberal preacher in America, the Reverend William Ellery Channing. In 1819, Channing was 39 years old, and much had happened in his life since he had heard that hellfire and damnation sermon in Rhode Island so many years ago. At the age of 14, Channing had entered Harvard College, where he had learned to speak four languages. He also became president of his class and graduated Phi Beta Kappa. After graduation, the congregation of Federal Street Church in Boston called him to serve as their minister. There, he left behind the hellfire theology of his childhood, and he replaced it with a belief in a loving God and with a belief in the humanity of Jesus. As a minister, Channing was a disappointment to some in the congregation. In appearance, he was short, he was a weak man, weighing less than 100 pounds. In manners, he was cold to visitors. He joined little in conversation, and he lived mostly in his study. Ralph Waldo Emerson said Channing was the most boring man I ever met in private company. Yet in spite of his shy, reserved personality, when he stood in the pulpit on Sunday mornings, dressed in a black pulpit gown and the fine white neckcloth, he would suddenly come alive. Many said he was the best preacher in America. Because of this reputation for eloquence, in 1819, the Baltimore congregation asked William Ellery Channing to speak at the ordination of their new minister, Jared Sparks. Channing decided to use this occasion to make a definitive statement describing his own views on religion. Ever since his childhood back in Newport, Channing had questioned the prevailing preaching doctrine that Jesus was the same as God, and that the message of Christianity was that people were sinners. The older he got, and the more carefully he read the New Testament, the less evidence he could find for this position. Channing would meet with other ministers and discuss his doubts. Some of these ministers would attack him, ridicule his ideas, and question his integrity. They told him, "You should not try to understand the doctrine of Calvinism rationally. You should accept it through faith." However, other ministers listened to Channing's doubts and found themselves agreeing with his thoughts. They urged him to make a clear statement of his beliefs as an answer to those conservative ministers who were attacking his theology and his integrity. In late April 1819, Channing began to prepare such a statement to deliver at the ordination of Jared Sparks. The title he chose was Unitarian Christianity. It was and is the most important Unitarian sermon ever preached. Tens of thousands of Americans read it when it was printed as a pamphlet. The sermon would lead within 6 years to the establishment of a new denomination called the American Unitarian Association. Now, I will refrain this morning from reading to you all 1.5 hours of his sermon. Still, I do want you to listen just to 3 sentences. Channing questioned the claim of Trinitarians that Jesus was divided into 3 parts. The divine mind and the human mind, and the divine mind, the God part of Jesus, was happy to die on the cross, the Trinitarians said, because in this way, humans were free from original sin of Adam and Eve. Channing wrote, "According to the Trinitarians, the divine mind of Christ, that which was most properly himself, was infinitely happy at the very moment of the suffering of his humanity. Whilst hanging on the cross, he was the happiest being in the universe. It is the Unitarian belief that Christ's humiliation was real and entire, that the whole Savior, not just part of him, suffered, that his crucifixion was a scene of deep and unmixed agony. This is Unitarian Christianity. Channing presented Jesus as a high moral example while refusing to accept his divinity. He praised the use of reason and refused to rely on statements of faith. He spoke of the dignity of human nature and refused to believe that people were evil. Thousands of Americans read the sermon. In the 6 years after the Baltimore sermon, the New England congregational churches split apart. Some declared themselves Unitarian, some retained the traditional Calvinist doctrines, and became congregational. By 1825, there were more than 120 Unitarian churches in Massachusetts and about 30 more in other states. At Channing's Federal Street Church in Boston, on May 23, 1825, a group of liberal ministers adopted the Constitution of the American Unitarian Association. They made the separation between the congregational churches and the Unitarian churches official. The organizations of the new association asked William Ellery Channing to serve as their first president, but Channing declined. In the last 20 years of his ministry, Channing turned more to social reform. As he did, he found it more difficult to get along with his own congregation at Federal Street Church in Boston. Most of his congregation did not want to hear Channing's sermons on the condition of jails, or the condition of the insane, or the condition of the poor. Channing did not relish controversy. He tried to reach understandings and reconciliations between both sides in complex social issues. Because of his compromises, he often found himself under attack by both the radical reformers and the establishment. The struggles over social reform came to a head over the issue of slavery. Channing was one of several Unitarian ministers in Boston who helped found the Anti-Slavery Society, symbolized by these images that ask, "Am I not a man and a brother? And am I not a woman and a sister?" Many in his congregation were so angry with Channing for his sermons against slavery that they refused to talk to him. When they saw him on the street, they would cross to the other side to avoid speaking with their minister. Channing had no wish to divide his church, but he also felt that he must speak out against injustice. The issue came to a head in January of 1840. One of Channing's closest friends, the Reverend Charles Fallon, died in a shipboard fire while on his way from New York to Boston. This was before railroads, and so the easiest way to travel from New York City to Boston was by ship. Fallon had been a longtime leader in the Anti-Slavery Society. When word of his death reached Boston, Channing and the other members of the Anti-Slavery Society held a meeting and decided that Channing should officiate at Fallon's memorial service and that they should hold the service at Federal Street Church. The society and Fallon's family requested the use of the church building from the Standing Committee of Federal Street Church, the equivalent of what we today call the Church Board of Trustees. The Standing Committee of the church would normally have granted a request for an outside funeral, outside memorial service. But because of Charles Fallon's leadership in the Anti-Slavery Society, they unanimously voted no. The leaders of Federal Street Church did not want the controversy of honoring a radical reformer. The next Sunday, a gray, cold winter morning in Boston, Channing put on his silk gown, his pulpit gown, and over his shoulders, his wife placed his cape. He stopped by his study in the parsonage to pick up the notes for the morning sermon. Only that morning, it was not a regular sermon. It was the memorial sermon for his good friend, Charles Fallon. Channing had decided he would preach a memorial to Fallon at Federal Street Church, whether the Standing Committee liked it or not. As he walked towards Federal Street, Channing must have felt a great sadness, not only over the tragic death of his friend, but also over what he was about to do. He had served the congregation from 1803 to 1840. He had gone through much in that time. He had experienced many honors and many defeats. He had received much criticism and much praise. Now, on that morning in January of 1840, he found himself for the first time in his long service directly defying the vote of the church's standing committee. He entered the building, he removed his cape, and at the appointed time climbed the stairs to the pulpit. He placed the memorial service on the lectern and looked out over the congregation and began to speak. "To Charles Fallon," Channing said, "the most grievous sight on earth was the sight of man oppressed, trodden down by his brother. To lift him up, to make him free, to restore him to the dignity of man, this seemed to him the grandest work on earth, and he consecrated himself to it with his whole soul." Following the service, Channing relinquished his salary and stated that he wished that all his public function as a minister should cease. For 2 years, he traveled, occasionally preaching in other churches. He participated in debates against slavery. He compiled 6 volumes of his collected sermons and essays. Then in the fall of 1842, while visiting with friends in Bennington, Vermont, Channing was stricken with typhoid fever. He died Sunday, October 2nd, 1842. The memorial service was held in Federal Street Church. Today, in 2014, I sometimes still think of Channing. When I hear references to the Trinity, I remember Channing's Unitarian Christianity. When fundamentalist preachers threaten us with damnation, I remember Channing's loving God. When unarmed African Americans are shot and killed on our streets, I remember Channing's commitment to equality for all souls. Of course, over time, many Unitarians outgrew the beliefs of Channing. In the 19th century, Channing emphasized the ethical teachings of the New Testament. Today's Unitarians are interested in comparative study of all the world's religions. Channing emphasized the priority of reason. Today's Unitarians are trying to learn how to better integrate reason with emotion. Channing emphasized the rigorous Puritanism of serious thought and study. Today's Unitarians want their church to be a place of laughter and joy, a place of both joy and serious contemplation. Nevertheless, if you happen to be in Newport, Rhode Island, with a little free time, walk by Channing's home. His birthplace is still there on the corner of School Street and Mary Street. There's a plaque honoring him. If you happen to be in Baltimore, Maryland, stop by the historic Unitarian Church. If you go inside, you can still see the pulpit where Channing preached his most famous sermon. And if you happen to be in Boston, walk by Arlington Street Church, the new name for Federal Street Church, and look at the statue of William Ellery Channing on the edge of the Boston Public Garden. The folks made him a little larger than he was in life, and his eyes are level with the pulpit in the church across the street. So if the church doors are open at Arlington Street Church, on Sunday morning, the minister can look out beyond the congregation through the doors and see Channing staring at him or her. And if you happen to visit one of our many Unitarian Universalist churches that bear the name All Souls, remember, as you enter the church, the words of the founder of American Unitarianism. I am a living member of all the great family of all souls, and I cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-enlarging sphere. I belong to this family. I am bound to it by vital bonds.